Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Staff at Twitter are this morning waiting to find out whether they will lose their jobs after the company said in an email that it's going to alert employees by 9 a.m. Pacific time, that's 4 o'clock in the afternoon here, about staff cuts. Twitter employees have been bracing for this kind of bad news following the firm's takeover by Elon Musk last week. Around 500 people are employed at Twitter's Dublin office. For more on this, I'm joined on the line by Adrian Weckler, technology editor at the Irish and Sunday Independent. Adrian, Musk paid an absolutely eye-watering sum for Twitter, so he has to increase revenue, he has to cut costs. How much of his workforce is he expected to fire?
Up to half. The news coming out of Twitter is that up to half of the 7,000 staff worldwide will be let go. As you said, Twitter employs 500 odd in Dublin, and they have already started to be let go.
The Irish employees
in Dublin.
So we're not waiting until 4 o'clock. That is actually ongoing now.
This morning, some Twitter Irish staff are tweeting that they no longer work at Twitter.
And that's not just because all employees have been locked out of the premises and locked out of their laptops. These people have actually been given the P45.
They've been told that they no longer work at Twitter. It's quite an extraordinary process that's going on. A widely circulated and published memo from management to staff essentially told them that they'd be informed today whether or not they had a job and not to turn up to work. Essentially, they were locked out of their systems, locked out of their work emails, and some of them are waiting to see whether they've access to their work email or not to know whether they've been fired or not.
Yeah, one wonders how the act of communication would happen if you are frozen out of your email. Adrian, you have
personal email.
Have you been inside Twitter in Dublin? You know what it does. How many people can he actually let go and expect Twitter to still actually function?
That's an incredibly pertinent question, given the number of trust and safety staff that are being let go, that have been locked out of their systems. I mean, that is the million-dollar question. For what Elon Musk says he wants to do with the platform, the new products he wants to introduce, its pivotal importance in things like the US midterm elections for stopping disinformation, and basic engineering tasks as well. Musk clearly seems to feel that it's bloated, that it doesn't need anywhere like the number of staff that it has. But, you know, others would take a very, very different view. And because he paid so much for this company, he bought it for more than twice that it was worth, tried to wriggle out of paying the bill for it. And now that he's on the hook for, you know, $20 billion more than it's worth, you know, he's trying to cut it to the bone to save money on his billion dollars a year interest rates. But it's not clear that there won't be chaos in the coming weeks and months. He could literally break several systems within Twitter. And that has really, really important ripples for public discourse and for democracy over the next weeks and months.
Because it has been noted by some, and I'm not sure with what authority or what credibility, but some people have pointed towards a 500% increase in the use of the N-word on Twitter since Elon Musk took over, and that content moderation seems to have gone out the window. Is there any substance to that? And if the Irish staff are affected in the areas that you're talking about, is it likely that we're only going to see that get worse?
Yes, and yes, there is substance to that. And it's not just that Washington Post report, which reported on use of the N-word increasing by 500% in the first day after Musk took over. It's Musk himself. Musk tweeted and then deleted a homophobic conspiracy theory about the husband of the US House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, Paul Pelosi, who was the victim of a break-in in their home. He tweeted and then deleted a conspiracy theory about that person. That's the person who owns the company, who's literally tweeting out misinformation. So yes, there is a very, very grave fear that we're in for a really troubling time in terms of what is an extraordinarily difficult task for any social media platform or any publisher at any time to guard against misinformation, disinformation.
Can we focus on the 500 jobs for a second? It seems very late stage capitalism, doesn't it, that the richest man in the world buys something as a bit of a plaything and then fires half the staff because he can't actually afford them. What reaction, what feeling have you heard from within Twitter?
Despair. Oddly, also relief at the same time, because while it has been a horrible period of weeks and months, while they're watching this soap opera unfold publicly about Elon Musk's prolonged takeover of Twitter, they were dreading what was coming. And the last week in particular has just been awful. People have been going to work not knowing whether they still have a job. Others have been told that if they don't launch new products within a week or two, such as, for example, this infamous $8 per month charge to for some users to keep their blue ticks, that they'd be fired. So some are saying that while this is their worst fear come true, it's also a relief for it to be over and they can just move on.
You have an embarrassment of stories on the front pages today, Adrian. I want to talk to you also about Revolut saying that it wants to enter the Irish mortgage market. You sat down, had a conversation with its CEO while you were in Lisbon. What did he say?
Nick Staronski and I sat down yet to talk for my podcast. And basically, I ran through some of the big issues facing Revolut. Revolut's trying to become a super app. They have these apps in China where you can do anything that literally govern your day. And in the last few days, Revolut has added messaging to its app. Now, I asked, well, where does it end? Would he, for example, consider mortgages? And yes, he said Revolut is planning to look at mortgages, introducing mortgages. I asked him what that might look like, what it would be. And he said, well, it'd be one of two things. Either Revolut itself as a bank would offer the mortgage, or it would act as an intermediary. But either way, he said, the aim here was to do to the mortgage market what Revolut has done to money transfers and other areas of banking, to bring an instantaneous, automated, user interface friendly version of it, so that even if you don't get your mortgage immediately, right there in the app, you will get a response immediately. You won't be waiting days or weeks for an update on where the process is.
Let's bring in Michael Dowling, the Managing Director of Dowling Finance Mortgage and Financial Advisors, into the conversation at this point. Michael, Nick Staronski said to Adrian that mortgages shouldn't take anything more than 7 days and certainly not 2 or 3 months. I think anybody who's taken out a mortgage in this country probably smiled when they read that line. Do you think that he's going to be able to do this?
Well, I think firstly, it's to be welcomed that there is another party looking at entering the mortgage market. And I think secondly, I'd agree with you. Any of us who either have got mortgages or who are involved in the processing of mortgages would smile wryly to think that the process can be done as quickly as that. However, I think the most important thing is that when Revolut makes this statement, it frightens banks. And it frightens those involved in the process, because to be fair to it, it has revolutionized quite a number of financial transactions. You look at the number of people who've got current account facilities with Revolut, like over 2 million people in Ireland, and it causes concern to those who are in the business. So I think the most important thing about these announcements is that these are disruptor type companies. And they challenge the process and they challenge the existing incumbents in the business. And I think that's going to be the most significant influence around what Revolut are trying to do.
And Michael, do you have any insight into why it is that the legacy banks have been left looking so flat-footed by comparison in their online offering and their apps? Because surely the technology can't be that hard, but yet their offering, their apps look really clunky beside Revolut.
I wouldn't disagree, and as one who's been in this business for 30 years, I am a huge believer in using technology to make the process so much more streamlined. I think you've a couple of issues with the incumbents. I think one is the amount of regulation and governance associated with a mortgage, and rightfully so. So that's not something that can be easily automated. I mean, Revolut itself went through a process of seeking a license from the central bank to trade in Ireland, and either they got frustrated with the process, but they decide not to proceed with the process. I think those of us in the business would welcome that we have a central bank that wants to ensure that any financial institution that operates within the market is properly regulated and has appropriate governance procedures in place. The other issue is that each bank wants to bring out its own proprietary online system, and I don't understand the logic of that. There should be one platform whereby a client dealing directly or a client who wants to use the services of a broker can transact their application with multiple banks. They shouldn't have to be repeating keying in applications to multiple lenders. Equally then, in relation to a mortgage, we have a antiquated legal system in terms of how a mortgage is processed. Now, that's another very serious piece of work and another day's discussion, but that is the most obvious delay factor in getting a mortgage, is the legal process associated with perfecting the mortgage and registering the mortgage.
Adrian, let me come to you for a little bit of insight on that, because Revolut's model is not to offer customer live, warm human body customer service. They do their business through frequently asked questions, and that's just not going to cut it, is it, when you have something as legally complex as Michael says in Irish mortgage products?
That's the big, that's the big other question with Revolut. You see it with its current products. It's starting to offer loans, for example. It has sort of credit card facilities, even things like insurance. And I know that there have been concerns, ombudsman-like concerns about, how to deal with Revolut if you've an issue. You know, marrying that with the other issue of how Revolut gets around maybe some of the current barriers and challenges. Don't forget that Revolut essentially uses a Lithuanian bank license for its operations. It waited 30 months for a central bank e-money license, and it took so long that by the time it came, it said, look, to heck with this. We're just going to go with the Lithuanian.
But they do have that license sitting on a shelf now, and they could activate it, couldn't they?
They could, but Staransky, what he said to me was, why would we? I mean, because I was asking him about this. I was asking, was he disappointed? I was saying, did he think the Irish system was antiquated? And he said, look, we have our license now. We're not going to go back to the central bank looking for other stuff. But to Michael's point and to your question, if they get into mortgages, yes, there is a slightly more, arguably a slightly more complicated process involved because there's much bigger sums of money.
All right. Adrian Weckler, Technology Editor of the Irish Independent, thank you very much. And Michael Dowling, MD of Dowling Financial. No December election in the North. More on this next with Amanda Ferguson and Deirdre Heenan.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.